leader, mentor, jokester, teddy bear. Those are just a few of the words I heard used yesterday as we all stood around and reminisced about the loss of Bobby Denton. I'm Andy from the Morning Crew on WIVIC. The whole list of words is immeasurable because he was so many things to so many people. To every fan who graced the gates of Neyland Stadium over the past 48 years, he was a part of their game day tradition. Most of us have never known a game without him. In fact, the game hadn't officially started until he said those words. To every employee and on-air talent, including this one, he wasn't just a boss, he was a mentor. And to all of us who knew him, he was our friend. As it was put yesterday, everybody has a Bobby story. And for the next hour, we want to share some of ours with you.
Here now are WIVK's Andy and Allison, WOKI's Halloran Hilton Hill, and Sports Animal's Mickey Deerstone.
You know, it's been a past day or so here. It's been a tough couple days here at the station.
It really has. I'm 1 minute, we're all crying. The next minute, we're all laughing, you know?
We made a promise to one another that when we get in one of those moods, a funny Bobby story is going to come out to bring us back out of it. So, Mickey, get some of those ready.
Bob.
Bob probably has a lot. Bob Kessling.
Hal's on the way, by the way, and Bob Kessling's in studio, man. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for asking me to be here. You know, Bobby has been such... I feel privileged to be one of Bobby's boys.
Yeah.
You know, one of the guys that he brought along and always pushed you. And I started working at WIVK back when I was on Bearden Hill in 74.
Yeah.
I was still in college, didn't know what I was doing. And every single day I'd come in and Bobby would tell me something else different. And he was one of the first guys in the station every morning. And at that time, he was doing the afternoon drive time. And watch Bobby. You guys got producers and all kind of stuff. Bobby was his own producer, his own engineer. And Mickey knows he'd be there. And this is back when you had to cue up the records yourself.
Yeah.
The old 45.
Yeah.
So he had a cigar going. He had a phone in one hand. He's queuing up records. He's flipping on Wayne Bell to get him on the new traffic reports. Yeah. And the thing, Mickey, that was so great about it was you never knew who was going to show up in a studio.
No.
And it could be a NASCAR driver. It could be a country music star. It could be one of the UT coaches. It could be Archie Manning. It could be anybody. And Denton would never miss a beat. Just keep on going. But that was the magic to the guy. And I had the honor to work for two of the greatest talents in Knoxville radio, Claude Tomlinson in the morning. Because I did a split shift. I did the morning show with Claude and then did the afternoon show with Bobby. Now, the 720 sports with Claude Tomlinson started at 720.
Yes.
There's no question about that.
Yeah.
The 420 sports with Bobby Denton might have started at 4:15 or 4:35. You're going to get it on eventually, but you never knew. And so Bobby suddenly pointed to you when he got in the middle of this, you know, trying to cut a deal on the phone, and he'd point to you to do sports, and you'd fill till he got off the phone, and then you throw it back to him. So
he's making a sale or something.
Yeah, that's what he was.
You know, it's kind of funny because, of course, Bobby's known for smoking cigars.
Yeah, right.
And he even smoked cigars when he played golf.
Yeah.
And we were playing golf one day, and he had this long cigar, and they were nice cigars.
Yeah, they weren't
but
cheap
he still ones. Liked the good value.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was his long cigar, and he'd hit, you know, duffed a couple or shanked a couple or whatever it was. Or whatever he did at that particular time.
He shanked golf shot?
Yeah. And I said,
he wouldn't admit to it.
I said, oh, yeah, he would. I said, Bobby, I said, keep your head down. He said, I can't. I'll burn my shirt.
Now, that reminds me, Andy, you have a funny cigar story.
We were at our first CMA Awards when they still had him at the Grand Ole Opry. And, of course, he always had a cigar.
Right.
And TV started at exactly a certain time. If you didn't get in the doors, they wouldn't let you in. So we're standing outside, and Bobby's got the cigar. And I see him walking over to the bushes, and he takes a cigar out, and he hides it in the bush.
Yes.
I said, what are you doing? He says, I'm coming back to get that after we get done. That's an expensive cigar. And he did. On the way out, he stopped and got it.
And it's funny, you always knew when Bobby was in the building, you smelled cigars and cologne.
And he would hide them in his trailer hitch. On the back of his car. You know, the square trailer hitch?
Oh, yeah.
He'd hide a cigar in there. And he'd look at me and he'd go, how do you like his hiding place? I said, well, it's going to be there unless somebody steals your car.
Well, they always said there was no smoking in Neyland Stadium. You think Bobby?
No.
Quarter in Alabama, you see the smoke coming out of the PA booth.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Bob. Yeah. We were asking this question off the air. Bobby's been doing the PA for many, many years. 44 years?
48.
48 years. Yeah. Has he ever missed a game?
No, he I remember. Never missed a home
never
game.
Never missed a home game.
Never missed a home game.
Yeah.
But now he don't do orange and white games.
No.
He told him that. He said, I don't do orange and white games.
Or back in the day when I was working here, they used to have freshman football.
And yeah.
I had to do the freshman.
He wouldn't do freshman football. Big time, baby. Big time.
You know, Bobby was so great, though. He loved gigging you if he could, or sticking a needle in you. If he could get you, he would get you. And I'll never forget, you know, I was thrilled to have a job. I wasn't making much money. I was working part-time, but at least I had some money. But I had to get a car because I had an old Pontiac that was smoking, and I couldn't get it out. You know, I couldn't even barely drive. And so your Dave Young came along and cut me a deal. Said, go up to Morristown. The guy up there at the Morristown Toyota, he'll get you fixed up with a good car. I said, okay, good. I go up there, and I got a Toyota Corolla, brand new. For $2,800. It didn't have air conditioning. It had an AM radio, but it was great. Brand new car. I loved it. So I pull into the parking lot there at up on Bearden Hill, and Bobby's up there on the landing, you know, smoking his cigar, and he's, you know, that he has a few choice words about my car. What is that? it's my new car. That's a new car. Let me look at that. So he goes, that doesn't have air conditioning. I said, no, it doesn't. Don't even have an FM radio. You're working at WIVK. And so he goes, Richard Harris, come down here. He gets the engineer to come down here. He says, put one of those FM converters. Remember that?
Yeah.
Put one of those FM converters in Kessling's car. So I said, wow, Bobby's being awfully nice. Yeah. You know, gosh, this is great. Bobby's going to help me out a little bit here, you know, improve my new car. Well, then I get my paycheck. Not only did he double the cost of the converter to put it in, he charged me an installation fee. I lost money that month because of the dang FM converter that I put in my car. And he would laugh about that. So then they used to have the Chet Atkins golf tournament.
Right.
At Dino Country Club.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, over by, used to be over by Westtown Mall.
Yeah.
And so Bobby's car was already over there, so he told me to run him over to Dean Hill Country Club. And so I said, okay. So I get him my brand-new car, and Denton gets in the front seat. And so we drive, and he's, you know, complaining about my car the whole way.
Yeah.
And so we get to Dean Hill Country Club, to the entrance right there, and he says, stop the car. I'm thinking, well, Bobby, you know, the clubhouse is right over there. He says, I'm not going to ride in this car. You pull me up in front of that clubhouse and this one. So he got out and walked all the way to the clubhouse because he didn't want to be sitting in my car. How about that?
That's it.
That's so funny. It. You know, we could have, if we asked everybody who had fond memories of Bobby to come in, the line would be from here to Farragut and back several times.
Yes.
We caught up this morning a little earlier because she called in with Dolly Parton because their relationship's legendary. Sometimes Bobby's version of it is much bigger than Dolly tells. We caught up with Dolly, and we asked her what Bobby had meant to her.
Well, Bobby meant more to me than he did most people because we go back a lot farther. We, back in my early days when I was just a teenager and he wasn't much older, we used to go to ball games together sometimes, kind of like a little date. We were never like hot and heavy, but we always had a great love and respect for each other, and we had a lot of fun. But I just always thought he was such a wonderful human being and such a great DJ, as you know. And I just really just loved him to death. We had a lot of laughs and a lot of fun, and he was always so helpful, you know, with my career and helping us at Dollywood with the talent searches. And, you know, he was just so many things to me, and just he's definitely going to be always thought of in the fondest way and missed.
Now, did you guys keep in touch throughout the years?
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. In fact, any time that I was in that area or any time that he was in Nashville doing whatever he was doing during the DJ conventions, we would see each other. Or on occasion, we would chat now and then. But we just always had a great relationship, very similar kind of to mine and Kenny Rogers' relationship. It's like we didn't see each other all the time, but it was just that heartfelt thing that when we did see each other, it's like we'd never not seen each other.
Well, we know Bobby was important to a lot of music careers early on. How important would you say he was to yours?
Well, he was very, very helpful to me in my early years. In fact, that was kind of how we stirred up our little friendship because he knew I was just, you know, dreaming of being a good artist or being somebody important. And he was always so helpful, you know, for me. And even after, you know, even during my whole career, when I would have a record out, he would be the first to help me do that. And even after the music business started to die down and when the older country artists were not being played that much anymore, Bob was always true to me and tried to do everything I could if I had, or he could, if I had something out that maybe wasn't playing on other radio stations, to try to, you know, help break that ice for them. So he was just a wonderful man. And as I mentioned, he, in our early days at Dollywood, when we had the talent search, where we found Susie Boggess and James Rogers, well, Bobby was very instrumental in finding some of those great artists that went other places. But he's just great to, he was always great to help new artists and help people. People felt very warm and connected to him because he was just such a personable human being, as I'm sure you both know.
Yeah, he loved people and people loved him back.
Yeah. They did.
In fact, in that way, he reminds me of you, Dolly, because you always have a smile. Bobby always had a smile. I don't think I ever saw him angry, maybe once. Because I did something I shouldn't have as my boss. He was, but other than that, he never.
Yeah, he was a good-hearted person, but he was a pushover. He was very much like me in that way. He loved his work. He loved his business, but he liked everybody to, you know, to do what they said they could do and should do. So he was a good man all around. He was just a quality human being, and anybody that ever had a chance to know him personally, I'm sure they'll have treasured memories of him and all good.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to miss him. Dolly, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to call him this morning. I know that's huge. And in fact, when we first took the job here 17 years ago, Bobby said, hey, I'm going to get Dolly Parton to call you guys and welcome you to Knoxville. And I was like, Dolly Parton?
Is gonna go? You know Dolly Parton? Yeah, we did. We were like so excited.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I remember I used to bug him all the time. I used to sing that in the tune of Davy Crockett. I would do that, Bobby Denton, king of the slick back hair. I think I sang that at one of his birthday parties or something. Of course, I'm sure I made up several verses to go with it.
That's
right. That was always how we ended the line.
Yeah, but exactly. Well, Dolly,
you are so sweet to call in.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we're going to miss him, and thanks to both of you for always being so good to me as well. You both are very special people in the same way that Bobby was, and I know we're going to all miss him. And thanks to everybody, and I'm sure there's a lot of sad hearts today, but a lot of happy memories.
You bet. Love you, Dolly. Thank you so much for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, if you're just tuning in, we're Andy and Allison here, along with Hal from News Talk, along with Mickey Dearstone and Bob Kessling, all in the same room. We decided, you know, get together for an hour. We could go on for hours and hours sharing stories about Bobby and our fond memories and everything, but we decided to do that on the air and share it with you guys who, everybody in Knoxville knows him anyway. And Hal, you're back from your remote. Thanks for being in here today.
Yeah, how long have you been here, Halloran?
Next year, 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, he hired me as, he brought a lot of people along. I was thinking, I know the first thing Bobby said when he got to heaven. Hey!
Hey. Hey. What are you doing?
Do y'all ever see Mad?
I did. He got mad at me once. I probably can't tell the story, but I said something on the air I shouldn't have.
And I saw him mad one time, and this kind of goes along with how big of a UT fan he was. Back in the 80s and 90s, the big thing was were consultants that did market research and stuff like that. And I can remember the first meeting that we had with our consultant. They came in and they go, why is a 100,000-watt FM station that's got a lot of listeners on country music break away from that to carry Tennessee football?
Yeah.
He goes, the first thing we need to do is to drop football.
Uh-oh.
And Bobby put both hands hard on the table, stood up, and said, this meeting's over.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, and he said, we're not doing that. And started out the door. And they said, no, wait a minute. We can talk this out. But the meeting didn't start off on the right foot.
Yeah.
You know, Bobby got mad at me one time, I remember, and chewed me out big time. When I first came in 74 to IVK, we didn't have football back then. And which is hard to believe that WIVK didn't have football. But at that time we did, and Bobby was working hard to get it. Well, we finally did. I guess it was 77, I think, is when we first got, when Coach Majors came, we first got the football. And so we're going to this big announcement on the morning sports that we're going to have UT football. So Mike Hammond at that time was the news director, and I was talking to Mike. I said, Mike, you know, we got 6:20 sports in the morning. I don't think we should break this at 6:20 in the morning. Why don't we wait till break it on the 7:00 newscast? Because, you know, that's drive time, and a lot of people would be going to work, and that'd be a great place to break it. And Mike kind of agreed, you know, and I said, okay, so we work up this big deal. So I do the 6:20 sports, and it's, you know, just basic bread and butter sports, and at 6:23, Bobby Denton's on the phone line, on the hotline. I told you to break that YouTube. I said, you're up? And you're like, yeah, I'm up. He said, if you don't have it on at 7 o'clock, you're fired. And so, you know, he listened and he knew. And if he gave you marching orders, he expected you to do them. And he said, I don't pay you to think. I'll pay you to do what I tell you to do.
I think I've heard that phrase from her, too.
I remember you coming out of the office when he was mad at you and that look on your face. Very frightened. I've never seen him that mad before.
I know. He was also a creative guy. One of the things I remember about him is his creativity. He was always coming up with ideas and stuff. And he was open to new things that we had never tried. When we went to him, the great thing about Bobby is you could go into him, and we did. He said, Bobby, we need $10,000 because we got an idea to lock some people up in a glass house in the mall over at Knoxville Center Mall. He looked at me for a minute and said, explain that to me. So I went through the idea, as it turned out, and he agreed, and it turned out to be that glass house promotion we did, which was probably one of the bigger things we ever did. But there's not a GM alive today who they would look at you and go, get out.
Yeah.
You know, if you came to him with that kind of stuff.
Or if he asked them for $20 these days. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, you know what was brilliant about Bobby, too, was his competitiveness in all of this. And I remember back in the 70s, you know, they had rock and roll stations here in town, and everybody's having these big promotions and things like that. And one station was going to give away $10,000, and Bobby kind of waited till they got their promotion up and running.
Yeah.
And then he announced they're giving away $100,000. You know, that's what he would do, though. Yeah. He would wait to see what the other guy was doing, and he'd always top you. He'd always get the last word. It was pretty amazing how he did it.
I think we've got Con Hunley's on the line.
Yeah.
Good morning, Con. How are you?
I'm fine, guys. How are y'all this morning?
Good. Thanks for being here and being a part of this. This is it's a special hour for everybody I know. Tell us.
Well, it'd be special for me to be able to be a part of it. I've been listening this morning and listening to all the stories and everything. And of course, everybody, as you said, everybody's got a Bobby story. And I was fortunate to get to spend some time with him last Friday and had a nice long talk with him, and we, of course, everybody knows we go back a long way, some 40 years, and so no Bobby Denton, no Con Hunley is, and dozens of other people can say that, but man, we had some great times over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, he was so like Dolly and so important to so many people's careers, and I'm sure yours too early on. How long did you know Bobby?
Well, actually, I came back to Knoxville when I got out of service in 1969. We got acquainted in 1970. And so he was very instrumental in my early career. And in fact, he took me to Nashville. He, back in the day, they had what they call the DJ conventions, which is now the CMA Music Fest. And so he took me down there. I was fortunate enough to be on a small label called Prairie Dust that Sam Kirkpatrick had chartered, and we'd cut a song, and the first song on it, I think, was Misery Loves Company, and Bobby was really excited about it and everything, and so we went to DJ convention, and he was taking me around, and he was introducing me to all these DJs from all over the United States, you know. He said, I want you to be on your toes, you know. He said, these people can really help you, and you really be on your toes. And I said, okay. And so he's taking me around, introducing a lot of people. I think Les Acri was there at the time. He was the MC in Memphis, TQR, North Carolina, New York, and Atlanta. A lot of major people from stations there. And so he took me over and introduced me to this one guy. And he said, Con, this guy, and I can't think of the guy's name or at least how he was introduced. He said he's real big with Billboard. And he knows everybody, knows all the TV producers and this, that, and the other. And he said, I want to introduce you to him. Well, he introduced me, and there were several guys around, several of Bobby's buddies around at the time, you know, and he introduced me to him. And so I was talking, we were talking about the music business, you know, my record and this, that, and the other. Well, the guys, all of Bobby and his friends walked off. Well, come to find out, this guy was one of those double talkers. Okay. And Bobby had told me, he said, now whatever you do, you know, you be nice to this guy, okay? You listen to what he has to say. I said, sure. And so they all walk off. I'm sitting there talking. This guy says, so tell me, Con, said, about this thing. So what do you see for on Candy McCord? And I said, What? And he said, well, when it might be part four for you. I'm trying my best to understand this guy, and I feel like a fool because I can't understand a word he's saying, what he's talking about. And I keep leaning closer and closer to him, you know. And I look around, and Bobby and the guys are over. They're probably 15 feet away, and they're absolutely in the floor. And I wanted to kill him. But we had some wonderful times together. He was like a brother to me. Kind of get emotional.
Con, can I tell the Stonehenge story right quick?
Oh yeah.
If the story needs permission,
I won't go into every detail. But Bobby and Mr. Dick and Con and myself went down to Stonehenge to play Stonehenge golf course. Well, Con had stayed up a little bit too late the night before,
right?
So he was having trouble staying awake. So we finished playing golf, and Bobby decided to go down Rockwood Mountain instead of jumping on the interstate and coming back on the interstate. Well, Con was riding shotgun, and every few feet, it seemed like, Con would fall asleep. And Bobby would look over there and see Con kind of nodding off, and Bobby was driving. He'd just take those two right tires and run them off the road. Gravel was flying all over the place. Con would go, whoa, whoa, whoa. And Bobby thought that was the funniest thing in the world. We'd drive a little bit farther, and Con would doze off again. Bobby would run those wheels off the road. We did that all the way back to Knoxville.
We had some great times. And funny, you know, this being the Masters week, and you mentioned the golf story, you know, and they talk about some of Bobby's famous lines of football time in Tennessee and pay these prices and pay no more. But the one refrain that we heard most on the golf course, yeah, if you remember, Mickey, was, oh no, not over there.
That was his favorite word. Oh no, not over there.
Yeah. He always hit it sideways, and if you recall, you know, in his quest to lower his handicap, the gimmies got longer and longer.
Exactly.
And longer.
He even developed a gimme stick that he used in Naples.
I mean,
and it was a little bit longer than a putter, but it was
absolutely
his gimme stick.
He said, that's in the leather. I said, the leather of what? I remember when he was very instrumental in my early career, and he was so proud of me, the fact that I was from Knoxville, and he tried every way in the world to help me. And I remember one time at one of the WIVK shindigs over at the Coliseum, they had Jerry Lee Lewis booked, and he canceled for some reason, whatever, I don't know. So at that time, my career was kind of starting to take off, and I was getting considerable airplay, especially around here, you know, and there's another story to that, too. But anyway, Bobby called me, and he said, you want to play the Coliseum? I said, what? He said, you want to play one of the shindigs? I said, are you kidding? Of course I do. He said, well, you're in. I said, really? He said, yeah, Jerry Lee Lewis is canceled. There were several artists on the show. So, I mean, I was just, you know, I was flabbergasted. I thought, oh, man, finally. So I had a 68 Plymouth Satellite at that time. And coming to Saturday night for the shindig, I washed my car that day. I mean, it was old and faded. Most of the paint came off of it when I washed it. But anyway, he said, you come right at the back of the Coliseum, and you pull in there and park with all the other stars. And I said, okay. So here I go. I got on my, you know, slickest, shiniest double knit polyester suit, and I'm headed to the Coliseum to open the show. And of course, I pull around back of the Coliseum, and I pull up there, and there's one of the policemen there. His name was Michael Haney. We eventually became pretty good friends. Anyway, he stopped me, and he said back, and he looked, and he said, where are you going? I said, I'm on the show. I'm on the shindig tonight. And I said, I was going to park down here behind the stage at the Coliseum like everybody else. He said, and he stepped back two or three more paces, and he looked at my car, and he said, nah, I don't think so. he said you could park up here in the parking garage. So I went up and had to pay $5 to park in the parking garage.
Wow.
I wasn't going to make any waves. And, of course, Bobby, being the cheapskate that he was, paid me all of $50 to perform.
And he didn't reimburse you for the parking,
right,
either.
No.
Absolutely did not reimburse me.
That's funny.
We had wonderful times together. It's really sweet memories of him that I will cherish forever.
Yeah. Con, thanks for joining us today.
I thank you guys, and appreciate the fact that you're honoring him this morning by taking this commercial-free hour and telling Bobby stories.
Yeah, you bet, Con. Thanks so much. Thanks for being here.
We decided to go commercial-free, and I'm not sure Bobby would have approved
that. I was thinking that the other day. That would have given him a heart attack right there if he had known we were taking a commercial-free hour.
If we had done this a week ago, he'd go, isn't it time when we take a break? Yeah. We got to pay some bills.
Yeah. He said it brought to you by.
You know, they say, y'all are talking to how he's kind of a cheapskate. I kind of have an opposite story of that. When we were owned by Dick Broadcasting, and we were being sold to Citadel, he sat me and Andy in his office, and he said, I want to redo the contracts. And you do?
Yeah.
I want to redo the contracts because I want to make sure that you guys are taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, we're just going to redo it as far as compensation, and I want you to be protected. So that's the kind of guy he was.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk for a second about everybody. We know him from broadcasting. A lot of people who've been around know him from broadcasting. But for a generation, they didn't hear him on the radio. They know him from Neyland Stadium. Mm. And they know him from the calls he made there. And there are a couple. There's one famous call. I don't know if Chris has it in there. That I know we've got it. We'll see if we can track it down. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Bob, it may have been 2003 South Carolina game, the third down in the river call.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that moment and all that?
Well, of course, when I'm doing the game, I'm not listening.
Right, right.
But everybody around me, I heard people laughing.
Because
back then, the booth was lower than it is now. And when he said it, you could hear people around, laughing. In the middle of a football game, people were laughing.
Right.
And of course, Bobby didn't care. You know, he could say anything he wanted to in that booth. But
yeah,
it's just clever. He's so quick.
But Bud Ford came running down into the PA booth and said, you can't say that.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bobby said, I just did.
Well, Lou Holtz thought it was funny.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'd been around him several times since then when he told that story. And every time that brought the biggest smile to his face when he told about him making that call on there. So,
you know, the thing, Mickey and I have been at a lot of different arenas and a lot of different stadiums. And a lot of times you hear the PA guy and you don't think anything about it. But when you walked into Neyland Stadium and you heard Bobby, it was so distinctive. It was so unique. He kind of packaged all his gifts, his marketing skills, his salesmanship, his entertainer. He kind of packaged that all together, and that's what he delivered as the PA guy. And also, I think that what came through even loud and clear was the fact he just loved Tennessee football.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what came through. But you know what? He didn't go over the top.
No.
You know, he was right there on the edge.
Yeah.
But he never went over the top of being a homer or being a guy that was just outlandish.
Mm-hmm.
He pushed it to the limit, but you could tell who he wanted to win.
Yeah.
But the way he packaged it, and that's what he did, Hal, here at the radio station. Everything he did was packaging, marketing, and there was genius to that.
A lot of it. I think we have that call.
Yeah, yeah.
Pass out of bounds, incomplete. Third and the river.
That's classic. I remember in there too. Everybody's like, "Woo!" The crowd goes crazy and laughing. Oh man!
I'll tell you one thing. Everybody's talked about his marketing genius. I was telling some people yesterday. He had tremendous taste, right? So he knew excellence when he saw it. And all of us sitting around this table were picked by him,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
He picked us.
Mm-hmm.
And to be picked by Bobby was to be endorsed by Bobby,
mm-hmm.
right? And so what makes Warren Buffett Warren Buffett is he can pick a stock before you know it's hot. He can lay his investment before it's the known thing. He picks it early. And so I think he looked at people and he could kind of see through to your value. And then he'd place his bet on you. And he'd take his brand and put it next to yours. And all of a sudden, you had to live up to Bobby's brand. And I think the reason he was joyfully tough on us is he really was trying to get a payoff on his investment.
Yeah. I think so too.
But well, you know, I don't know of anybody that but took more joy when the people that worked had success. You thought that you were the most special person in the world when something happened, because Bobby would come up to you and make you feel so good what you did. And then he'd come back and say, now I expect you to do it again.
Right.
Or get better.
Absolutely.
You know that's the thing, he pushed you.
The thing about working for him too, it was that you were working for somebody, not a company. You were working for him and the whole Dick Broadcasting Group at that time. You were working for people you liked, who knew you personally. You weren't just a number. You weren't just a part of a corporation. It was so it was a different way of thinking about it.
Let me ask you all a question, because this was something that came to me yesterday. Bobby could be tough. Make no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I mean, and he paid attention to the product. He listened to his radio stations. Mm-hmm. He didn't, pawn that off to somebody else. He didn't even count on his program directors to listen to his stations. He listened every day. He knew what you were talking about. He knew what you got, what you missed. And so he loved the product himself. I never thought that Bobby Denton would fire me. I thought he would fire me up.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. But I never thought he would fire me.
Yeah, you weren't afraid of him in that way. Yeah.
I always felt like I could make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever feel like he would fire you?
No. That's Bob Kessler, yes.
No.
Well,
you know what he did, though? You know what he did? He said, I will back you, but you better be right.
Yeah, that's right.
You're right. I will back you, and he said, if you have a big store, I remember when Paul Lyle was here also doing sports, and this was the time when Bill Battle was going to be fired. Well, we thought we had it nailed down. And, of course, I'm sure you know how Bobby was. Bobby already probably knew, but he wanted to make sure we knew. And he told us. He said, I want to know who your three sources are, and you better be right, because if you come on with a big story like this and you blow it and it's not right, I'll fire you.
Yeah.
And that's the way he was. But he pushed you. He wanted you to be right. You know, we had a – now, Paul left and went into sales, and I was a one-man sports department until Mickey and Mike Heath and Stan Cotton, some of these other guys came along. But he expected you with one person sports
to
department
win.
To compete with the Journal and the Sentinel.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've got beat reporters. They got guys on UT football all day. You're supposed to cover everything and beat them. That's how he pushed you. Mm-hmm. That's what he expected.
I was walking down the hallway one day in the old building, and I had just come back from covering a news story. And I was the second person to report the story that day. And this is when the other stations had full news departments.
Right.
So I'm down the hallway, and Bobby goes, hey, Halloran. I said, yes, sir. He said, why were you second? And I just said, well, I got there as fast as I could. I said, well, maybe you want to be over there working for them.
Oh.
He said, what do you got to say to that? And I said, then they'll be number one.
I remember.
I like that.
I remember I was working in the morning, and they brought Mike Hammond had gone into doing something else. He'd been promoted in the station. He was no longer the news director. And they brought a guy in from Hawaii. I don't even know who the guy was, but he was going to be the news director. Well, across the scanners, there was a story. You heard all the chatter about a fire up in Fort Sanders.
Yeah.
And so this guy said, it's probably just, something. Well, it turned out it was a big-time fire. He didn't send anybody. He didn't go himself. And it turned out it was a major house fire, and somebody was actually sent to the hospital. And Denton came in, and he hated if you did not put forth an effort. He didn't think this guy put forth an effort. And he fired him 2 days later.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That was if you did not give it. And now, if you were out there, if he thought you were trying, Halloran,
you were busting your butt,
and you missed it, then he was okay with that.
Yeah.
If you gave a good effort, but if you didn't try,
got to go.
He would fire him.
Yeah,
Alan Dick.
There you go. No, go ahead.
Alan Dick is on the line with us. His father was the founder of Dick Broadcasting, and actually, how we all got here. And Alan Dick is still the head of Dick Broadcasting. Alan Dick, welcome to this tribute to Bobby Denton.
You know, Halloran, that's how I got here as well, by Jim Dick.
Literally.
I think Marilyn had more to do with it.
And I was raised by Bobby. So, I've got good habits and bad habits.
Yeah. Hey, Alan, I wanted to ask you a question, because you're a little bit different situation. I mean, because you work for Bobby. When you first got into radio, I mean, Bobby was the GM, and he hired you. And then later on, Bobby worked for you.
Yeah.
When you became president of Dick Broadcasting. How Was it two different Bobbies, or was it the same Bobby in both situations?
You know, it was the same Bobby in both situations, Mickey, because, you know, he was nurturing, and it didn't matter. I mean, you know, Bobby's goal was to teach, to bring along, to include, and, you know, as I transitioned from working under Bobby to working with Bobby, yeah, it was all the same, and he was a great strategist. He was a savvy business person. I mean, you know, people just think he, a lot of times, was this easy-go-lucky guy. But, you know, he had a great ear. You and I know him as the P.T. Barnum of radio. Yeah. I mean, the guy was a born promoter.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I would be having difficulty in another market, or our sales weren't what they should be. And, Bobby was a great sounding board to say, Bobby, what do you think? And he would keep coming back to, it's the people, Alan. It's the people that make it the business. It's not the business. It's the people. And as you and I know, too, I mean, he was a people person.
Mm-hmm. He sure was.
Yeah.
He always said that to you, that people buy advertising from people they like.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. And I think that's really, you know, how Bobby got into sales is, as you and I remember, and the others here, and I'm not all sure who was on the call, but, you know, he started on the programming side of it. And he would admit, and my father would admit, that he wasn't the best announcer when he started. But he did. He had a great ear, an up-and-coming artist, wonderful promoter, and people wanted to associate themselves with Bobby. So then that, I think, transitioned to being with so many of Knoxville's clients, and they would say, Bobby, you know, write up this order for me. Let's do business this way. And, you know, so he transitioned into sales, really, from a programming side of it, I think, with the encouragement of my dad. And was a natural born seller as well. He didn't sell, really. People just wanted to do business with him.
Yeah.
All right, can I ask you a question, Alan? This is Halloran. What did your father see in him? Why did he entrust this enterprise to Bobby? What did he tell you made him believe Bobby's the guy to run this ship?
Well, Halloran, you've been there close to as long as his. As anyone, and Bobby was a third son of my parents, and sibs to my brother, my sisters, and I. He was really part of the family, and I think, you know, from an early age, and Bobby had not had the good fortune of having a father figure around, that dad sort of took him under his arm. His dad as well was a teacher and would, you know, coached him. And I think by the time that dad, you know, got to the position that he was wanting to play a little more tennis and to get involved philanthropically in Knoxville, looking around the radio station, here was the guy that everyone went to. Not only in the radio station, but outside the station, within the local community, because IVK, you know, that was was the primary focus of what you all do, was the local community. And there wasn't anyone that exemplified, I think, that kind of leadership and trust as well as Bobby did. And obviously he was a great choice.
All right, Alan, this is Andy from Andy Nelson. It's good. I'm glad you took time to call in. It was such a, we were just talking before you got on the phone, what a pleasure it was to work for your family and your dad and Bobby, and the way things, the industry has changed over the years. But thank you so much for being here and being a part of this. This is awesome to bring everybody back in and do this.
Well, you're very kind to include me. Bobby, as you know, was the best.
Yeah.
And I'll look forward to seeing you all Monday night.
All right. We'll see you. We'll see you. That's Alan Dick on the broadcast. That's tough.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, we're here in the studio. We're simulcasting, so you're probably hearing some different voices you're not used to hearing. We're Andy Nelson. We've got Mickey here and Halloran's Hill here. One little quick thing to show you what kind of person Bobby was when it comes to just the average guy, the listener or whatever. We got a little quick note from somebody who said yesterday, because everybody was posting some of their memories. She said, I'm now 63, remembering at age 16. I sent a handwritten letter to WIVK telling how much I enjoyed listening and dialing in requests and how appreciative I was that they cared enough to play those requested tunes. Remember, this is before email. This is handwritten.
Right.
And she said, shortly after I received a letter in the mail from Bobby Denton saying how he appreciated fans like me, last words in his letter were, "It's people like you that make people like me." And he was a wonderful soul, she said. So what a cool thing that is.
Yeah.
He got that.
That's kind of
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
His nephew, Ronnie Morton, is in the room with us. And that's your dad.
Yeah, yeah. About as close as you can get.
You even sound like him. Right?
The more you hang around with him, he's infectious. He just sort of rubs off on you. But I appreciate you coming in. I've sat in a lot of backdoor meetings being related to Bobby. And it's funny seeing Andy and Allison here because you guys debuted at 2121 Cherokee Boulevard where Bobby lived on a cassette tape before you ever. Ever made it to there. I mean, he played it for everybody before he brought you guys down. So, you know, Bobby was an opportunist.
Yeah.
And he always worked with the less fortunate. You know, he was all about the less likely to succeed. And he would take the less likely to succeed, and that's who he wanted to work with. He thought anybody could take somebody that was likely to succeed and make them better.
Yeah.
But he was the opposite of that.
Yeah, he was, like we say, he wasn't just a boss, he was a mentor, but he's also a cheerleader for you. I mean, that was one of the biggest things for us because I'll tell you, I was scared to death. Our boss, when we left Charlotte, which was a bigger market in Knoxville, said, when you go up there, this is a station that's got a 29 chair, don't screw it up. And that was our goal. Don't screw it up. But Bobby was there supporting us the whole time.
You know, that means that all three of us were least likely to succeed.
I'm sure we like the way you put that, Ronnie.
All of us in here. Absolutely. Certainly all of us. More recently, he was trying to hire the guy to sell on WIVK that sold him some boots down at Elliott's Boots and Shoes. And the guy probably would have been the number one sales guy.
You're right.
I mean, that was just who he was.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. Also, we have your Dave Young that worked with Bobby for a long time, did afternoons on WIVK. And by the way, you look good, Dave. You look good. Dave's gone through a battle with cancer himself. So I'm going to read something that he wrote right quick about a story with Bobby. He goes, Bobby and I had a lot in common, cigars, country music, and cars. We were at the road run at Chilhowee Park, and Bobby found a 1948 Chevy. He was dickering around with a guy on the price, and they couldn't get together. So the next morning, we go back to see if they can make a deal. The owner would not budge on the price, and then there's this guy that's standing there taking all of it in, and he says, I got a nice 53 I'll sell you. The only thing wrong with it is the motor's missing. We drive over to Oliver Springs to see the car, talking about the car and what might be wrong that would cause the motor to miss. Bad plugs, wires, or bad gas? Well, we got there and found out why. The car didn't have a motor. The motor was missing.
Oh, man, that's good stuff. There's so many stories we could go on and tell. You know, I think for the folks who are listening who are you know, Neyland, like we mentioned earlier in the show, there's not anybody who's been in Neyland Stadium who have been to a game without Bobby. And some of the phrases that he used, I know there's a lot of people didn't realize this, the Pay No More story. There's actually a story behind that.
Yes. Nick,
do you want to tell it?
Or? It was actually put in the program and started to keep the vendors from charging more than what the concession stand prices were.
Right.
And see, I always thought it was to keep, you know, to basically tell people not to tip.
Yeah.
But what it was is they were making sure, because I guess they'd had some problems earlier with vendors upping the price and putting the extra money in their pocket. So that's the reason they started doing that.
Yeah. And now, because I know a whole generation of people have missed out that. Yeah. In fact, here's a little clip of him doing that.
Today's concession prices are posted at each stand. We urge you to pay these prices, and please pay no more.
And at least 60,000 people said it with him every time.
Exactly.
If not everybody
else.
Well,
exactly.
I've got a funny one on that. I drove his car a lot. And, of course, everywhere you went, everybody's waving at you because they didn't know whether it was him or I. And he had license plates that pay no more. And I walked into the Woggles up there at Morrell one day, and this guy came in behind me. He said, "Woo, I love that license plate." And I said, "Why is that?" And he said, "I'm not paying my ex-wife no more either."
Bobby loved that story.
It's got a lot of meaning.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we got some special guests are going to be calling here in a little bit, too. But before we run out of time, I wanted to get a chance for Gunner to come in and Colleen and everybody coming. But Hal, talk real for a second. I know, Bobby, there was a lot of personal things that you could talk about. Go ahead.
You know, I became a close friend of Bobby's over the years, and it's kind of hard to talk about this stuff. 1993, you'll remember this, Mickey. They do a two-page spread on me in the New Sentinel.
Yeah.
And up to that point, I don't know if anybody was sure that I was black, but we made them sure on that.
No denying that.
And it was amazing what happened. There was just a flurry of phone calls to the radio station, and I think some people were none too pleased. Let's put it that way. And so we started getting death threats.
Mm.
So I was scheduled to do a remote somewhere else. And the call came to the radio station. If he comes here, we're going to kill him. And when the call came that they were going to kill me, Bobby called me in his office and he said, "Halloran, you don't have to go." And I said, "I'm not the guy that's going to run my whole life. I'm sorry. I'm going." To which Bobby said, "I'm taking you in my car." He called Rudy Bradley down at the police station and said, "Can I have a couple of plainclothes officers?" He drove me to the remote in his white Jeep Grand Cherokee, and he sat right next to me through the whole remote, put his hand on my knee and said, "If you go, I go."
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go work for anybody else. Yeah, I got job offers.
Right.
But that's who he was, right?
Yeah.
And it's my dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mickey, you want to share something now, or you want to? Okay.
Yeah, we got Kenny, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, here's the thing about one of the things about Bobby. If you ever went around with him anywhere or you mentioned his name, everybody always said, "Yeah, I went to school with Bobby," or "My sister's aunt's uncle went to school with Bobby." Right. There's one other person I've met since I've been in Knoxville who that same thing applies. No matter where you are, the name comes up, somebody knows somebody who went to school with him or whatever. That's Kenny Chesney.
Yeah.
And Kenny is on with us right now, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to call in this morning. Good morning.
Oh, no problem, man. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I know that being from Knoxville, you're well aware of Bobby and how well he's loved around here. Tell us, share some of your thoughts or memories about that.
Well, Bobby was always, I mean, as you guys know, always a big supporter of mine. He was probably one of the most encouraging guys that I had early on starting out, and even after I actually got going in this business at all, but he was, I didn't realize until after I, growing up in Knoxville, you'd heard, I met Bobby and I had heard his name a lot, but I didn't realize how much of an icon Bobby Denton was in our business until I went on the road and met a lot of people in our business that really respected and loved him. And I gained a whole new respect for Bobby Denton. We became really good friends. And, man, I tell you, my manager, Dale Morris, who was very instrumental in getting the group Alabama going in their career, was really good friends with Bobby. And Dale's told me so many great stories and funny stories about Bobby and Dale and all the things they used to do together and how much fun they had. And, Bobby was just one of those guys that had this for me, he just had an infectious personality, and he was someone that loved music, and he was someone that loved what he did, and I'll never forget that.
Kenny, this is Mickey Dearstone, and I know that...
Hey, Mickey, I love you, man.
I love you, too. And when you were... Before you, got your contract and were playing in places around here, and you'd just gotten out of high school, I knew that a lot of... what people wanted to do trying to get started, they wanted to bring music by to the radio station and let Bobby listen to it. Did you ever do that? Did you ever bring songs by or some of your music by for Bobby to critique?
I sure did. I used to bring them by to Bob Thomas. I used to bring them by to Les Acree. I used to bring them by to Bobby Denton. I think I think that I aggravated everybody at that radio station at one point or another. I think I might have even brought them by to let you hear them, Nick.
Yeah. But Bobby had a little better ear for a hit record, I think, than maybe I did.
I don't know about that, but Bobby was always very, he was always really good to me, and we had a lot of mutual friends through the years, and especially there in Knoxville. And, I tell you, I didn't get to make it to a Tennessee game last year, but I was watching. I was going on the road, and I was out of the country actually, but I was able to watch a Tennessee guy. I forgot what game it was on ESPN, but you could hear Bobby in the background at the game, and I could tell you that it just made me feel closer to home to hear his voice at the game. You know, saying it's football time in Tennessee. Or please pay these prices and please pay no more. You know, and I heard that, and it just made me feel a little closer to home. And, man, I'm going to miss hearing that at those ball games, I can tell you that.
Kenny Chesney, thanks for joining us this morning.
Oh, no. Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, Kenny.
Proud to be part of it.
We were just talking about Bobby hired just about everybody. And I can see now. You know what I'm saying? Everybody, Gunner's in here. And if you're listening, Gunner, I know that he hired you here as well. I mean,
absolutely. 16 and a half years ago, I was at rock bottom in my career. So Bobby didn't everything. I was hearing Kessling talk about Bobby when he did afternoons at WIVK, didn't have a producer. Yeah. I still don't have a producer. So in that way, the tradition continues, folks.
Andy and Allison have one, but he's not here.
Yeah. But anyway, I just, you know, as a kid, I would in Midland Shopping Center, I'd get on the bus and drive over to the stadium to hear Bobby Denton, and he was more than a boss. He was just somebody that I just looked up to in so many ways. And I want folks listening out there, first of all, I know there's probably thousands of folks that are listening that knew Bobby Denton, because he just seems like he knew everybody.
Right.
And I just hope to give them a voice. And I want to tell everybody just how big he was in the music industry. On my show, I've been in the studio with Randy Owen of Alabama, who's saying Bobby Denton, I owe him everything.
Yeah.
Kenny Rogers was playing cards with Bobby Denton, good friends. And 2 years ago, Merle Haggard was in town. So I got on his bus. And, you know, Andy, we know the Brad Paisleys and the Kenny Chesneys and the ones we've seen coming up in the business. But the Merle Haggards, they still make you nervous. So you get on the bus with Merle Haggard, and he kind of looks at you and doesn't say anything. And he kind of looks at you. And then he said, "How's Bobby Denton?"
Yeah.
And so, basically, folks, I'm talking to Merle Haggard, and I get a Bobby Denton story. So, that's how big. But Bobby means everything to my career, and that's just what I'm here to say.
Yeah.
All right.
And well said. Yeah.
Funny story.
Okay.
I'm kind of liven this thing up a little bit. One of the favorite stories that he told, and believe me, he would tell them more than once. I think I've heard this one about 15 times.
It never got old, though.
No, it never did. Down at they used to have the old DJ convention is what they called it, and then it turned into CRS. And they were staying like four to a room, or the three to a room, and there were two beds, and they got a rollaway bed for Les Acree. They used to be the program director at IVK. Well, Les snored like crazy, and they were staying at the Opryland Hotel. And, you know, all the rooms have that little balcony that looks out into the atrium and stuff.
Right.
So in the middle of the night, they waited till Les started snoring. They just opened the doors and rolled his bed out on the... and he thought that was the funniest thing in the world. He said, "Can you imagine people walking down there and with all those plants and hearing somebody snoring and there's somebody out on the balcony?"
Yeah.
And he kept that sense of humor right to the end. You know, I got to spend a couple of days with him while he was still conscious with us. And Charlotte and I sat down with him, his sister, and he looked at us after he came back from Vanderbilt last week it sounds sad, but I'm gonna pick it up, Mickey. But he looked at Charlotte and I. He said, "Well, the bad news is I got cancer and I'm dying. You want the worst news?" We said, "Well, yeah, Bobby, what?" He said, "It runs in the family." He grinned from ear to ear. Bobby was about knowing he had towed a good one.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Channing Smith's in the studio too, Channing.
I've been listening to you guys, and I had just a couple of quick updates. I've been laughing with you. Bobby,
and by the way, he did call him update.
That's a new, that's a new to Channing.
I'm surprised he's talking without an intro.
Honestly, man, the guy, as much as he had to do, he didn't miss anything. So we're sitting in the newsroom that we had a news reporter that had just gotten a car, and we'll just say it wasn't a very nice car. And Bobby comes screaming through the halls, "Hey, who whose car is that parked out for me? And this reporter goes, I'm sorry, Bobby, it's mine. Do you like it? He goes, you got to move that thing. People will think our ratings went down. And this is a true story. He eventually bought the guy a car so he wouldn't park it in the parking lot. Yeah. He really did.
Oh, we had Bernard Addison was working in the news department. And Bobby would give Bernard his hand-me-down clothes. They were about the same size.
Yeah.
And right after Bobby gave him a bunch of ties, Bernard came in, and the tail of his tie was down below the front of his tie. And Bobby didn't say a word. He just goes and reaches in a drawer and gets a pair of scissors and just reaches and cuts the tail off of it.
Oh, man.
And then I remember there was an article that came out of the 10 best-dressed bachelors in town, and Bobby was number 10. And so I went to Bobby and I said, Bobby, they made a mistake in this. And he said, what? And I said, they didn't go to number 11. He said, who's number 11? I said, Bernard Addison.
Yeah, just quickly, to work for Bobby was like this. And you say you only saw him mad once.
Yeah.
I made him mad in the first week that I worked there. I was just become news director. We'd had I wanted pagers. You know how he was a cheapskate. He wouldn't give us pagers. So I was at home. Apparently, it's Saturday. We had a small earthquake. Phone's ringing off the hook. I had no clue. So I get to work on Monday. Bobby calls me in. Where were you on Saturday? I said, what do you mean? I was at home. He said, we had an earthquake. The phone's ringing off the hook. Should have been here. I said, Bobby, I didn't know about it. I didn't feel it. Nobody called me. He said, well, you're the news director. You're just supposed to know these things. I said, man, what have I gotten myself into? He didn't want to hear your excuses. He wanted the job done.
I want to save a few minutes at the end for Ronnie to say something if he wants. Colleen, go over, and I'll tell you one more quick story. Bobby had a fiesta party at his house one time for the whole staff.
Yes.
Had a mariachi band in the backyard. The backyard was packed. We had people everywhere, and it was really loud. And I thought during the party at one point, I thought, wow, we're really loud with the band and everything. Apparently, during that time, one of the neighbors called and complained to Bobby. And I didn't know what Bobby had said on the phone back to them until it got published in the paper the next day. It was like in a social section or something like that. And the story went something like this. Bobby didn't receive complaints at a party he had, last night or whatever. And the lady said, I can't hear my television. And Bobby's response to her was, well, turn it up. And that was in the paper. That's the kind of sense of humor he had. Colleen is in here too. Colleen, I know Bobby was important to you as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he was. First time I met Bobby, of course, I was from West Virginia. I didn't know anything about WIVK except that I wanted to work here because I had read enough about it to know how successful it was. And I'll never forget the first time I came in, he said, you're a woman and you want to work nights. What about the boys? And I said, what about the boys? He said, well, you know, can you give them up for a little while? And I said, I promise, if you give me this job, that will never be a problem. And then when I was hired and I finally came here, he said, you know why I hired you, right? I said, no. He said, because you drove a pickup truck. Okay. Had nothing to do with any ability or talent. But he was impressed with the pickup. And I even borrowed it to get to the interview, which was funny. So
Yeah, is cool.
Guys, pay note of something here. Bobby retired from... what is this company over a decade ago?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of anywhere that this happens.
Right.
The guy that was here 10 years ago. And the other thing that I'm noticing is just the energy of joy that has been circulating via these stories. That is Bobby. It's like he's here now.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, this literally is his spirit. And for your spirit to go on, a decade after you in an organization?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Kent, go ahead. I know you got something to say. You want to jump in?
Yeah. Bobby actually hired me full-time back in 89, and we had all the funny memories that you guys do. But Mickey and I were talking yesterday. There's one thing about Bobby that he was so proud of, and that was recovery.
Yeah.
Bobby helped save my life. I'm an alcoholic, and he helped get me into treatment and into recovery, and he shared that with so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, I'll tell you what, I'm grateful. I'm grateful I'm alive today, in part thanks to Bobby Denton.
Yeah,
Bobby had a heart for broken people because he had been broken, and he could love you through your brokenness. Other people would write you off. Yeah. He'd write you on.
That's right. Ronnie Morton's here, Bobby's nephew, and Ronnie, I'm going to give you the last minute here. I know it'll be tough, but...
I'd just like to, I don't know who called the Angels in, but man, they've been here. It's unbelievable to watch God work at the house, just in the family and all those things during this tough time. So So I appreciate all that. And, you know, when someone came in at about 11 o'clock there yesterday and said, Bobby Dent's trending on Twitter, we all just started laughing because he's never had Twitter.
Yeah. Like, what's that?
He couldn't even run a computer. But one thing, he loved a promotion. I think what might be cool is on Monday, they're going to have a celebration of life. We're not receiving friends. It's at 7 o'clock, Cedar Springs Christian Presbyterian Church on Kingston Pike. Come early. And I'd like to challenge everybody with a social media campaign. Which flyer UT flags on Monday? If you got a car flag, a UT home flag, put it outside. Which Razor flags to Bobby Denton on Monday?
You got it. Thanks, everybody, for being a part of it today. And we'll go back to our normal programming. Thank you, guys.